Airport, and I just wanted to check in. First time getting in here after listening for many, many years. Back to you.
Welcome. We're here, you know, every Sunday night, and I'm glad you're listening, and hopefully some night in the future you'll either have a topic or a question or some kind of a comment. The technical net lives or dies by discourse, by conversation, by exchange of ideas and opinions. So I hope you'll continue to listen, but I hope that you will consider participating in the future.
Roy, as a matter of fact, I do have something to ask.
All the points you just made there, TechNet, keep going with listeners bringing up questions or answers to other things. Again, the name here is Gregory, and we're located by Kennedy Airport, KE2-DTU, in the monitoring with me. Thank you very much.
Okay, you're welcome, Gregory. I look forward to some future participation from you. Sam, you have a question?
Yes, I do, Roy. I have an ICOM 745, which I inherited, and I'd like to find somebody who would be able to check it out. It works. I turn it on, but I'd like to have it cleaned up, if you know what I mean. And I was wondering if you knew of anybody or if the club knew of anybody who does that type of work. Thank you.
Okay. That's a good question. And in the good old days, I would immediately tell you of a good friend of mine and of many of the people on this technical net, Andy, WA2CDL, for many, 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 many years, basically ran the tune-up table on the ham fest all over the eastern coast. Unfortunately, he passed away a couple of years ago. So I'm not aware of guys who, technical repair type guys in the area anymore. If anyone is aware of someone that does that type of a job, let me know here. Hit that push to talk. Yeah, I was afraid about that. It's a dying art, unfortunately. And, I've talked to more than a few technicians, and especially as they get older, they kind of get tired of customer interactions, which can be problematic at times. So I am not aware of anyone who does that locally. You got to be very cautious, because there was once a guy who was a decent repair guy, and he got older, and he got a little bit careless. I exchanged emails with guys all down the eastern coast who basically lost their machine because they sent it to him, and he never bothered to send it back. So, caveat emptor, let the buyer beware. I wish I could tell you a good guy to point you to, but these days they're few and far between.
Comment?
Certainly.
AB2FYH, the name is Jim. Well, anyone who, in my past, I have a 745, and I'm going to mention the name, and maybe he's not allowed to be mentioned, but his name is Harold Goretsky, Land Air Communications, and I don't know if he's still alive. Over.
Unfortunately, Hal is in Potter's Field.
You know, I'm sorry to hear that. I really am sorry to hear that. And I wonder what happened to his museum of radios. Over.
Well, he kind of passed away in financial arrears, and an auction house. I forget the name of the auction house. It took them months to basically go through them and to sell off his stuff. And for months thereafter, there were people showing up in Andy's tune-up table asking him why the damn thing doesn't work, and Andy would open it up and find that the tubes had been put in the wrong position and such. So they all went through an auction house, and family members, I don't know exactly how much money he owed and, you know, what the situation was. It was a bit of a mess at the end. He had kind of destroyed parts of his home, doing strange things, you know, trying to rebuild stuff without any permits or any kind of idea of how to do them. And it was sort of a mess. It was very unfortunate.
Yes, it was. I was so there. I was there so many, many, many times. And I would just walk around in awe of all the beautiful tube radios or whatever he had. And I hope someone has that and it didn't go into the trash. And this is KB2FYH saying thank you for listening. And I try to listen to your net every Sunday night. I don't participate, but I participate by listening. Thank you.
KB2FYH.
Okay. Yes, George.
Thank you, Roy. Station coming in for the 745 repair. We spoke this morning. Are you still there?
Yes, I am. Alpha Echo 2, Yankee Golf. Handle is Sam.
Sam, please email Agent George at att.net. I have a contact for you. And it will be very satisfying. Agent George at att.net. Email me. I'll pick you up tomorrow. And give me your phone number. We'll discuss it.
Roy, I hope you copied all of that. You're the net command. And I appreciate George coming in to give me this recommendation. That's wonderful news.
Okay, Sam, I mean, that's the whole point of this. This is not a monologue. This is not a broadcast. This is a collection of helpful people, and George is one of our helpful people who helps out in occasion. So thank you, George. I'm sure Sam will appreciate that, and I'm glad to hear there's some guy out there who's still in the business. So I hope everything works out for you, Sam.
Clarification, Roy.
Thank you, both of you. I want to tell you a little story. I was watching YouTube. On YouTube, there was a man in Florida, and he was showing how he renovated a HeatKit 101 transmitter. I mean, it was fascinating in terms of replacing the paper capacitors, checking all the resistors, I mean, and how they wash the unit. They actually soak the equipment, and then they put it in the oven to dry it. It's really an amazing process that this person was going through and demonstrating. And I saw two different YouTubes, each one following the same procedure. I would never take a hose and hose down the inside of a rig. I wouldn't think of it in a million years, but that's how they wash it out. And then they put it in the oven at 100-something degrees for 30 minutes, and then they let it sit there for 20 minutes, and then they take it out and let it sun-dry for X number of minutes to make sure it's, you know, it's a really amazing process. And what they use, Ajax, they use all sorts of items that you wouldn't conceive of using to clean a piece of radio equipment. Back to you, Roy.
KC2GS. Yeah, we used to have a club member who did a lot of reconditioning, and he would throw his chassis in the dishwasher, which was funny because I don't think he ever actually used the dishwasher to wash dishes. He was a big fan of TV dinners, disposable and what have you. But, I mean, he used the dishwasher solely to kind of clean chassis. So yeah, it's possible, especially the old boat anchors. Those things were built like tanks. George, you wanted to say something?
My phone is ringing. I can't make it stop. I'm hitting the no call button, but it just keeps going. But let me clarify this. AE2YG. Is that Sam?
That's Sam.
Okay, Sam, contact me via email. AgentGeorge@att.net. Send me your phone number, I'll call you, and give you a contact for somebody who is an ICOM repair person. Now, as I mentioned to you earlier today, I do older Kenwoods. That's my forte, if you recall on that QSO that we had. 745 is a great radio. He's going to want to have a discussion with you. This person will want to have a discussion and then see whether... it's worth doing it.
No, definitely. That's George@att.net. Is that correct?
Agent George. A-G-E-T. George. At att.net. Not aging, George. Not aging. Agent George at att.net.
Roy, I'm going deaf in my old age. You got it straight for me?
Yeah, I'll email it to you.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Thank you. George, I will reach out to you. I'm very excited to have the rig checked out to make sure it's up to snuff. That's really great news, and I thank you very much.
And you're welcome. You're welcome. As we spoke earlier today, I'm into the older Kenwoods. That's my whole repair line. And good to hear you here tonight because I went back in my records to see who I have recommended it and gotten great results with on ICOM because he used to work for ICOM. All right, 73 Sam. Thank you, Roy.
73 George.
Yeah, you're welcome, George. Thanks for helping, Sam. It's att.net, right?
Confirm.
Okay, I just wanted to triple check. No problem. I see you don't put your email address on QRZ. Any particular reason? I guess that was enough.
I'm on the phone. That call has got to come in.
Oh. Okay, Sam. Be well, and I'll email you George's email address. Don't worry.
Thank you very, very much, Roy. Thank you, George. Have a good evening, both.
Okay. It's time for you, Wes. What do you got for us tonight?
Okay, this is Enterage here. So the first subject to discuss is, can you make square wave from even harmonics? So there was a quite nice discussion between me and Dr. Roy, and I would like Dr. Roy to say a few words about it, please.
Okay. First things first, you have to kind of understand that a square wave is a specific thing. It is not waves that have almost instantaneous transition, and then they flatten out, and then they have a transition up. Square waves, by definition, have a 50-50 cycle. There's a length of time that it's flat and positive. There's an equal and opposite. There's an equal amount of time that it's absolutely negative. So that's what a square wave is. taken that as the actual definition of a square wave. The only way that you can create a square wave from sine waves is to add together a long, long list of odd harmonics. You can get something that looks sort of like a square wave by throwing in some even harmonics, but if you look at the percentage that they're positive versus they're negative, it's not 50-50. It's 49-51, it's 48-52, it's off to the side there. But that's not really what a true square wave is. So the answer that square waves can only be made up of odd harmonics, sine waves. You cannot add even harmonics and get a better approximation to a square wave. Every time you add an even harmonic, you add a distortion to it. And sometimes it looks sort of square wave because you're just kind of time shifting it, but it's not really a square wave.
Okay, entry exam, I'm going to take the opposite side. The question that I gave you in the email is, what is the catch? So that was square wave with second harmonics. Or to say it with use of different wording, what is the explanation for making it with even harmonics? That's the job? Okay. So, you can still get the second harmonic added to the square wave if you know how to design and analyze it. So it's not true that you cannot make it. You can make it. And I explain why. And why we sometimes need to make it. Although Dr. Roy was absolutely 100% right that his right was limited. But anyhow, you can get the second harmony added to the square wave. You know how to, analyze. So the one full dollar mass equals plus minus 1 volt peak to peak square wave is has spectral levels that would be one. The first harmonic would be plus 2.1 dB, and yes, the sine has a greater peak than plus minus square wave. The third harmonic would be minus 744 dB, which actually comes to approximately minus 10 dB down. And the first harmonic will be 7.88 dB, or the minus 24 dB down. So to get the second harmonic equal to the third harmonic, the distortion from the hardware of the NPN common emitter, NPN typical transistor, a nonlinear amplifier is exactly as we've done with use of the amplifier that has a transfer function to the simulator. So single signal is a complex ramp of the peak sample to saturate the signal. The variable gain transfer function of the VCA, I'm going to explain what VCA is, can also be simulated in the firmware. Because you're not buying NPN alone, unless you want to have it from discrete component. So however you want the ramp signal with an edge, which you mentioned, then you use the waveform by the formula and look up the table or the hardware. So that gives you a greater second harmonic than the exponential ramp lady drop. Okay, so I mentioned VCA is a voltage control amplifier and lets you use a voltage to control the amount of another signal that is allowed through the output of the module. The higher the output, the control voltage, the more signal is passed at some voltage level, the entire signal is let through. And of course, if we would think about the twists and transistor configuration, we can still make it. We can still have a second harmonic in it. But anyhow, let me go further. So that would be, we can ask, what do we have by adding even harmonics? Adding even harmonics to the square wave can enhance the sound quality by introducing additional frequencies that continue to a more complex and richer sound. That is typically useful in applications where more dynamic and engaging audio experience is desired. Of course, we have at a ham radio we use 2.4, which is the kilohertz, which is the width of the single sideband. But still, there is a benefit of having richer audio. Let me drop.
WB2HWW.
Yes, Howard.
I don't know if he changed the subject, but what does he want to do with that square wave? There are a couple of easy ways to generate a square wave from a sine wave. You could do the Fourier analysis, but what does he want to drive? Does he want to drive logic circuits? Because you have an oscillator, you generate a sine wave. There's a very easy way to go from a sine wave to a square wave. The first thing is, what does he want to use that application for? Go ahead.
Howard, I have no clue whatsoever. So I'll turn it over to Wes, and Wes can explain whatever it is he wants to do. It started off as a rather simple question, that can you build up a square wave from even harmonic sine waves? And my answer is no. It can give you at times a distorted square wave that's, not 50-50, but, 49-51, or even worse. And all of a sudden, I'm hearing this strange thing about how making a signal, making an audio better quality, which in my mind, the square wave doesn't improve quality of your audio experience. So, again, I will leave it to Wesley to explain what he has in mind.
Okay. Well, the whole question was, can we have a square wave that has a second harmonic, let's say, which which is not present in normal in the square wave. And then I decided that I'm going to explain why do we need it. So this is the explanation to the question. But for some reason, it looks like it wasn't heard. So I was saying that introducing additional frequencies to make the richer sound, and that is useful in applications where more dynamic, engaging audio experience is desired. It's a simple answer to the question. I'm not saying that you can have an enormous amount of the sine wave and creating the square wave. We're not talking about it. We're talking about the presence of the harmonics. So I'm simply lost in what the question is about. Back to you.
Okay, Wes.
I took me a while to key up. I'm not trying to step on you, Roy. We are full duplex, but it took me a second to find the push to talk on this thing. Well, there's a very easy way to generate a square wave from a sine wave. You get a sine wave, say you got a 1 megahertz oscillator, got a sine wave, you go into a Schmidt trigger, then you go into a divide by N counter. You can divide by 2, 4, use a bunch of flip-flops, and you're going to get 50% duty cycles. That's one way to do it. You could generate a square wave by a lookup table in an A to D converter. You put an analog sine wave in. You go into a digital converter and then go into a lookup table. It's done every day of the week. the simplest way, to, you could also take the sine wave. You're not going to be 100% symmetrical, 50 and up. You run into a Class C amplifier, and you generate harmonics. But if you want to generate square waves, one of the ways to do is you have a clock, say, running at at 1 meg, and then what you do is you have a divide by n chain. Go ahead, Roy.
Okay, you're right about all of those, but I don't think that that's the fundamental concept that Wesley is kind of playing around with. It's not just generally how can you create a square wave, but using what harmonics, adding them together, will give you a square wave. And the textbook answer is odd harmonics. Even harmonics will introduce slight aberrations to the square wave. So we're not really just talking about a mechanical method of creating square waves, but more of a Fourier transform perspective of what a square wave is.
Yeah, and let me get it. Okay.
Can you hear me, Roy?
I'm going to talk about the 50% duty cycle. I'm not necessarily talking about the 50% duty cycle that is mandatory for the square wave. We can use comparator with the potentiometer to adjust the voltage or the unit, right? For the frequency variable square wave, we can consider using a more stable 555, which obviously everybody is knowledgeable about, for the fixed frequency. We can adjust the duty cycle of the square wave at the different frequencies by adding a voltage source and adjust the values. And for the switched capacitor filter chip, we can use an adjustable square wave with the specific frequency range. So it's not that we're talking about a mechanical creation of the square wave. We're talking, can we have a square wave with the second harmonics or not? Yes, we can, and it gives us certain benefits, and I explain what benefits do we have, and to achieve.
Okay, Howard, I heard you, by the way. If you have anything to respond to that, I don't know what the point of this exercise is at this point.
I really don't know what he's trying to get at here, but two things. A square wave has infinite harmonics, okay? If you have a Fourier transform, and I forgot how to do this stuff. Did it back in college, maybe did it once or twice in my engineering life, but you have many terms, and you have infinite number of harmonics. But yes, you can take a sine wave, you can go to a Class C amplifier, have a tuned output, you're going to get a sine wave at the end, and then you could square it off. You could square it off. But the best way to get a square wave is exactly whatever you want. But if you're just saying you want to take a sine wave and get to the second harmonic, you're right, Roy. You want to go to the third, fifth, and so on, odd harmonics, because you'll have less distortion, and you'll get a better symmetrical. But yes, can I take a sine wave, say at 500 kilohertz, and go to 1 meg and do some fancy logic and make it perfect? Sure I can. But I don't know what he's trying to get at. The only thing I can say is that you have infinite amount of harmonics in a Fourier transform, and if you integrate it, I can go back to a sine wave just by using an integrator. But you could take a differentiator, put a sine wave into it, and you can make a square wave. May not be perfect. And a square wave doesn't have to be 50 on and 50 off. As long as you don't change the shape too much, yeah, you can have different, you also have to worry about the rise of your waveform and the slew rate of your amplifiers.
Okay. Was my transmission explaining about regulating duty cycle of the square wave heard, or I was just doubling because I'm using echolink and wasn't heard? Dr. Roy.
I can't tell you 100%, but I heard what it sounded like you were saying. It didn't kind of make that much sense to me in light of the actual original question. The question was one thing, and you went off someplace about how improving the audio fidelity and richness of the audio, and there's nothing about that in creating a square wave. So yeah, I didn't know where the two connected anywhere.
Boy, did you hear my last comment? I think I doubled.
Your original question was, what is the explanation for making it with even harmonics? And you have it in your email. The sentence right before this is, what is the catch? And the question is, the sentence before that is square wave with second harmonics. So that was exactly what I was trying to say. And then I went to explanation of voltage control amplifier, and I gave the reason for it, and then I went to the adjusting of duty cycle of the square wave, because it doesn't have to be 50%. And I said, how can I do it? But because I'm not sure if that was heard or was gobbling, we can use a comparator with the potentiometer to adjust the voltage on the input, or the frequency variable square wave. We can use FF555 for a fixed frequency, or we can adjust the duty cycle of the square wave at different frequencies, add a voltage source, and adjust the values. But we could also, for the switch capacitor filter chip, use adjustable square wave with specific frequency range. And then I went to why do we need second harmonics in the square wave? And then I said, I'm going to make it quite short. The advantage would be that if we're adding those even harmonics to the square wave, it helps with the signal integrity and reduce distortion. And when we're talking about reduced distortion, we're talking about richer sound if we use it for sound. And then I mentioned that for single sideband, we have a 2.4 kilohertz bandwidth. But even though that it is limited, we still have a richer input for it. So I don't understand what is the problem with understanding why did I bring the subject.
The problem, as far as I know, is... Yes, Howard. I hear you, Howard. I heard you before. I'll hear you again. Just give me a minute. It's just that I kind of take things from the beginning of the paragraph to the end of the paragraph. So the way the situation looked when you wrote it there was simply a puzzle of, can you reconstruct a perfect square wave using a even a harmonic? And again, my answer continues to be no. You are adding a distortion to a square wave. You can add the distortion. I'm fine with it, but it's still you're adding a distortion. And why are you talking square waves and high fidelity signals? Square waves don't give you high fidelity signals. So I don't know why you brought up the square wave if you were going to segue it to being able to have a rich tonality or such. Now, Howard, I heard you the last time when you kind of, unfortunately, Wesley kind of broke into what you were saying, and I'm sorry for that. But, yeah, I heard your response.
Okay. I can generate a perfect square wave at the second harmonic. I'm just going to have to use some Schmidt triggers, and I'm going to have to do some filtering, but why not? But any square wave has harmonics. I don't care if it's a square wave at the fundamental frequency. The definition of a square wave is made up of integrals. It's basically a Fourier transform. Any square wave is going to have harmonics.
No doubt about it. Because of the transition you take. When you go from zero to one or from low to high, at that point, you're going to have harmonics. So every square wave has distortion, even at the fundamental frequency or the second or third or fourth. But if I want to go, let's say I have a 1 megahertz signal. I want to go to 500. I use a device. But, you know, there are people who will, in audio, do inject a square wave because they can do certain things. You can do it, but I think it's kind of ridiculous. But you can add distortion. Believe it or not, people who like, you know, tube amplifiers, like who want to do guitar work, the way they're designed, they put a slight distortion into it because the human body or the hearing system likes to hear that distortion. But mathematically, there is distortion. A pure sine wave has no distortion, okay? But any square wave is going to have distortion. But that's just the way it works. Over to you, Roy.
Okay, I know all that. I'm glad you're telling everyone. The point, again, was that there was no discussion of circuit design or fancy playing around with the signal. It was simply, can you add this to that and get the other thing? And there's no talk of Schmidt triggers. There's no talk of 555 timers. That all had nothing to do with the question. If you want to kind of add it to the question, then so be it. And yeah, I mean, there's a lot of distortion that is useful with audio engineers. A perfect sound kind of sounds a little strange to our ear because there's always something that's distorting things. Even in reality, you know, acoustically. So I understand, I appreciate it, and if that's what you were trying to get to, Wes, so be it. But I was unfortunately just answering the question that you asked, not a question that was modified down the road someplace.
So, yes, a square wave cannot have a second harmonic. So even harmonics are not possible with square waves. But we do it for purpose. And I explain, and that's why I ask, what is the catch? And it's being done. And that's for a number of reasons, one of the reasons I mentioned. But anyhow, let me go to the next one. I tried to make something in America, the Smarter Scrubber experiment, Smarter Every Day. The guy, if I'm not mistaken, he's PhD now, and he made it a good point, but that's for Dr. Roy to comment, if you don't mind, but please.
We went through this before. He's a very nice guy. He's a relatively smart guy. He is not a PhD. Yeah, I even wrote you where he got his degrees from. I think he got an electrical engineering bachelor, and he got some other business master's or something. I forget the exact thing, but I definitively looked it up. He is not a PhD. He's a very nice guy. Little bit of a Bible guy, but, you know, what the hell. We all have a Mishigas. Yeah,
comment,
nice guy.
Please.
Yes. Howard?
Yeah, sorry for that. Just the way this way All-Star works. That's an interesting subject. I used to be into audio stuff. The human ear is a non-linear, you know, the way the ear works is non-linear. Also, the human body wants to feel vibration. So, sometimes they add distortion on a dance floor. Very interesting. Just want to make that comment between solid state and tubes, why some people like tubes. Even though transistors can be more linear than a tube, to say that rich with that warm sound, and that's basically distortion. That's all. No more comments, Roy. That's an interesting part of the of engineering is audio design.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good topic for discussion probably at another time. My understanding, I've listened to guys who actually run these mixing boards and other such things to record in digital these days, that there actually was a different way that they mixed it for digital and audio because of misapprehension of you know, what the final material was going to sound like and such. And they've gotten to the point where a lot of the stuff that goes on vinyl gets just remixed from the original digital. So even though there are guys out there who think that their vinyl is all analog, it's actually digital and then transferred to analog. And it's the mixing method that engineers tend to use that's slightly different. They tend to blend it differently for the two modalities, is my understanding.
You're 100% right. People don't realize when they give you a clean-sounding music and they get rid of distortion, they have to mathematically digitize it and then remove all of the stuff. But yes, sir, the, going from analog, you know. You know what? I find it really hard to believe. This is just a side story. You hear people saying, oh, I got a 12AU7 or 12AX7 triode amplifier in front of my CD player. And I say, wow, you want an analog format. It's just so funny. And also another thing is that people don't realize that if you really want the good sound, your power supply has to be an old-fashioned supply. A lot of times they will use switching supplies, and they got these 12AU7 amplifiers on a gold-plated case with it and run the DC to DC converter. And that's not going to sound that good. I just think it's so funny. They get $1,000 for a tube. That's selling snake oil. Okay, Roy, just wanted to make that comment. WDHWW.
AC2GS. Hi-Fi is a den of grifters. I have never seen so many just BS ideas promoted. One of them, you mentioned, usually when they pull this kind of nonsense, they make a point of exposing the vacuum tube so there's a little hole in the chassis and up pokes the glowing vacuum tube to kind of show everyone that, you know, we're not cheating you, we're not lying to you, we actually run it through a damn vacuum tube. But I mean, this is this is the field of endeavor where, with a straight face, they used to sell rocks to people. The idea is that it was an anti-resonance type of device, and you bought it for, I don't know, $200. You put the damn rock on top of your receiver, and it balances the mechanical resonances of the device.
K2RY.
Yeah, David?
What do you know about vintage stereo speakers compared to the stereo speakers of today in terms of quality, correct?
Well, I mean, I don't have a diverse supply of experiences. There's only so many speakers I could kind of play around with and such. There were some very good old speakers. There were a lot of crappy old speakers. Bose made a great deal of them. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, it's probably the average speaker is better today than it was 50 years ago, but there are crappy speakers to this very day. And there are wonderful speakers from the 50s. What was it, KLH or something? I forget his company. Made great speakers. But, again, there was a lot of Bose speakers out there that were useless.
QSL, can I get on your list for the next question? I have a question about the synthesized radio.
Okay, when we're done with Wesley, Wesley's about one-third of the way down his list, so we'll see what happens. But I'll put you down on the list.
Okay. So we were talking about nice gentleman, not yet, and his comment. And it wasn't really... So I tried to make something in America, the smartest Kruger experiment. So he presented the device that he was trying to make, but having a 10,000, 10 million of subscribers doesn't really require from him to have any production. That's enough of money for him to feed his family from that. He was trying to make a point. Just to write back to you for your comment.
Okay, you try to make a point, and the point, unfortunately, is that the United States is inherently a service-based industry country. We provide services. Most of the money that we get from the rest of the world is gotten through the services that we provide. We do not manufacture much, and we do not have an infrastructure to support manufacturing of a lot of different things, whereas China is the exact opposite. China doesn't really supply much in the way of services. They supply things. And since they supply things and have supplied things for decades, they have they built cities out of nowhere. Shenzhen was a village. They grew it into a major city. It's full of factories. It's full of warehouses. They're next to each other. There's conduits where if anyone needs anything, they go down the block and they find a guy who makes it or stores it for another guy who makes it a couple of blocks away. So, I mean, it's a different industry. So he meant well by wanting to build it and make it completely in America. That's somewhere between difficult and impossible. And even the manufacturers that still remain are not very flexible. You know, they'll do what they want to do when they want to do it, and if you give them a nick or a twist or something, they say, well, we just can't do that. Whereas in China, if they can't do it, they'll make believe they've done it. They'll get you something. So, I mean, it's a different world. The closest that America gets to made in America is where they buy the parts outside, usually China, and they assemble it either partially or completely in America. Otherwise, that's it. There's very little that's actually being manufactured from the raw materials on up to the finished product. And, you know, I mean, surprise, surprise. I kind of knew this for the last 10, 15 years.
Comment, please.
And to HCN.
Comment.
So, I think that the USA costs often more than a product from outside of USA, to be delicate with the word. To make a plastic part, we need injection molding machine, and that machine needs injection molding form. Factories make them mostly in China, and eventually use those forms on their injection molding machine in USA. The particle of gold presented in the video, that video talks about, cost 38 cents per piece in USA, while China sells them for 9 cents per piece. The conclusion expressed in the video was, we are screwed as a nation, just because of the simple event in our history. Everything started in December 8, 1993, when Clinton signed NAFTA into the world law. And of course, that Clinton NAFTA allowed businesses to fly away from USA. We are maintenance job country, where the two of the best jobs in USA is electrician and plumber. But of course, priority is given to some military parade, made at the expense of taxpayer money, and that just happened to be at the His Majesty the King's birthday. Very funny coincidence. So, that's what the video says, that I'm going to quote it. We are screwed as a nation if we can't do intelligent work of tool and die, making the tools that make the things. It used to be that America did the smart things, and then we would send the machine that we made to another country. And the country would operate the machine in the deploying world. We have flipped it. We are now to the point where the smart stuff is done elsewhere else, and they send us the machines, and we push the partners to operate the machine because they want made in America. That's what they want. Made in America, that label, that's what counts right now. When was the last time that you saw it? I need, and then raise up the quote. I need you to understand this because I realize we have lost something very, very important. And we did it. By moving ourselves to sleep, by pushing money around, and doing intellectual property work, but not doing manufacturing work. So, that would be end of the subject, just to work for your comment, and I go to the next one.
Okay, I think Howard wanted to say something, so let's give Howard a chance.
Yes, I do. I know this is political, but we've got to get back to manufacturing in the United States. Roy, you and a lot of people think we can never do it, but if we continue to allow other people to manufacture the things that we really, really need, the basic things like medicine and other stuff, then if we ever have a war, we're screwed. And no country can survive like that. Other countries who import everything are at the mercy of other countries. So if we ever want to get to the point where we get our sovereignty back, then we got to start trying to manufacture things. Yeah, people don't want to work in this country. Yes, we could have the infrastructure, but everybody, you know what I find so bad about this and the hypocriticalness of people? Is they say, oh, we don't want slaves, we want fair wages, but everybody wants the cheapest stuff, and they don't care that somebody elsewhere, wherever they may be, is getting paid nothing or practically nothing, and they're being treated horribly. That's what bothers me. You know, we want fair wages, but the members and the people are buying stuff at cheap, and they really don't care how their TV is made, or how, they buy a tool for $20 for, like, real cheap. They really don't care how it's made. I think that's so unethical. But that's...
Yes, Howard, that's a totally political discussion, and economics as well. It's a lot more complicated than most people will allow. And you're not going to change people's nature. If you tell people that you can have an iPhone that's made in the U.S. of A. by USA labor union workers, and it'll only cost you $4,000, well, after you get the smelling salts out and wake the guy up, you're never going to sell another iPhone again. That's just the reality of things. So the point is to point your economic engine at the highest productivity possible. You leave the peanuts, you leave the little monkeys who screws on to the poor unfortunate people in the third world who will take a living wage of $100 a month. Because for them it works out, they survive. But for Americans, they'd laugh at you. So you can't have your cake and eat it too. And you're not going to change people's attitude. There's a lot of people who will tell you that, sure, I'll pay five times the price for something if it's made in America. They're all full of it. But they're not going to do that. So, I'll let you comment in a minute, please. I mean, unfortunately, you can't set the clock back. You know, everyone's kind of thinking of the good old days after World War II. After World War II, the rest of the world was blown up, and we had industry and factories and all kinds of fun stuff. But world changes. So, okay, tell me what your opinion of what I said was.
You're absolutely correct. People will act to their best interest. They'll look for the cheapest price. That's capitalism. But what I am saying, if we do not change, then we will not
we will not exist as a country sometime in the future because we'll be at the mercy of other countries. Let's say country X who manufactures everything. All right, I'll say China. Let's say they decide they don't like our politics and they say, okay, we're going to cut off. We're not going to sell you paper. We're not going to sell you toilet paper. What would we do as a country? We'd be in big trouble. My problem is, yes, you're right, Roy. You have people who say, well, I want freedom. I want people to be treated fairly, but then they're not willing to pay for it. And when you say that people are willing to turn screws, what we have done in this country, we got rid of slavery, but we got it in another country. We want to have clean air and clean water, but, oh, we don't care how other countries have it. And you know what? The planet's too small for that. So I don't know how this thing is all going to end, but if we cannot manufacture some of the basic items we need, sometime in the future, there'll be a gun on our heads, and we'll all be in big trouble. But you're right, Roy. People want the cheapest item. That's how economics work. You can't change the laws of physics.
AC2GS. The theory of kind of global markets is that everyone gets screwed in the end because it's not all or one. You know, I mean, okay, when things kind of broke between China and the United States, it's not like we suffered and they had dances at night. You know, they suffer as well. So in a global market, inevitably, there's no one market that takes everything over because it's not economically feasible. So different countries become optimized for different things. You know, there was a really stupid conversation in Congress about tariffs to bananas so that Americans will build bananas. Number one, you don't build a banana. And number two, that was that Lutnick guy. You can't grow that many bananas in the United States. They're tropical fruits. You need, you know, and so these tropical countries that barely produce anything else produce bananas. Okay, God bless them. So, I mean, global economics makes more sense than this, you know, in case the big bomb comes, we have to have everything made in Brooklyn. You know, because, I mean, you can go into smaller and smaller niches like that. You know, how would you like to have that attitude about Queens or Brooklyn or Staten Island? I really wish people wouldn't interrupt me. I know I talk a little bit long, but give me a break. I'm net control, okay? Anyway, that's my response.
Roy, I didn't step on you. That was the squelch crash. That was one of the receivers just opening up. Nobody keyed up, okay? Second, I agree with you. But if we keep, who could take more pain? I'll give you an example. Let's say, and I'm using a hypothetical question, Roy, so, and play along with me. Let's say the United States decides, okay, we want to defend either Israel or Ukraine. And China says, if you go on their side, we will cut off everything to you. We do not care if we get pain because we have a different kind of society. Our people will do whatever we tell them to do. How long could we survive as a country, as a society, if China suddenly said, we're not shipping you any goods anymore. We're not sending you the medicines. We're not sending you toilet paper. We're not sending you paper cups, whatever it is. All out war. We're not going to use bombs. Thank you. But what we're going to do is we're going to turn off your basic needs for a modern-day society. Who could last longer, Roy? I think China would win in the end. We go back to the Stone Age. And it's sad, but that's what happens. And that's, you know, China could put a gun to our head. We're in a very weak position.
Okay, I'm not that optimistic about China either. I know a lot of things going on in China. China's real estate market has collapsed. Their banks collapsed. Their stock market is a mess. Even their electric vehicles, there's tens of thousands of unsold vehicles sitting in parking lots all over China. They're in a real mess. They have workers who don't get paid anymore, so every so often when they have nothing better to do, they burn down the warehouses, they burn down the factories. I mean, we don't hear about it too much.